So the idea of dreaming, waking up, having an epiphany, having something happen, is pretty well built into the Christmas story. And really, that's where my springboard takes me, because I haven't got the logo up this morning, but you know that Dayspring's logo is that of a rising sun. It's intended that there are pinky, bluey clouds in the background, because the word Dayspring is a rare word in the Bible. It actually means east, okay, because words had to do quite a lot. The sun rose in the east. That's what the story was about. And we have not tried to call ourselves Dayspring. Long, long story. We tried to stop calling ourselves Dayspring because, to use an Elizabethan term for the name of a church in the 21st century, seems pretty stupid. But no which way could we get rid of it. And I know you have to explain, because some people think that it's about us going boy-oying every day, a day in the spring. We've even had prophecies about that. Lots of people just think it's a word. We actually thought about at one stage, most of you will know this, I think, if you remember our storytelling, but when we were trying to devise a name for Open Blue, we wanted the Blue Skies Trust initially, but there are other Blue Skies Trusts around. I think there's Blue Skies Ballet School, which didn't really sort of fit. And the thing we came across was the equivalent word to Dayspring is the word Abenaki. There's a group of Indians called the Abenaki Indians. But in the end, we went backwards and forwards with that. It got a sort of alternative kind of feel to it, so that was nice. But we thought if you stuck that word up on the front of the bus, nobody would know how to pronounce it. But it actually means east. It means dawn. It means Dayspring. It's the same sort of word. But deep into us is something about what we're looking for, is for people to see something, to have an epiphany. And built into the idea of Dayspring is that dawn is a process, not a single event. Now, let me riff off of that for a moment or two. So, Dayspring was born around the mid-90s. It was a time of real spiritual optimism. There was loads of stuff happening. What happened particularly was that in the late 80s, early 90s, there were some prophecies. Now, prophecy is where Christians stand up and say what they think is on God's heart. And sometimes you can say that generally about God's intention, and it's always an approximate business, but sometimes people get dead specific about it. And a guy called John Wimber hosted some people at a big conference with 8,000 plus people there in Docklands, and all sorts of people signed up. The guy to this prophecy about revival coming to England. So Sandy Miller at that time was Nicky Gumbel's boss. He signed it. Terry Virgo signed it. Gerald Coates, who led our network, signed it. There was a lot going on and people were expecting something. And then in 1994, the strangest thing happened in a warehouse church on the edge of Toronto, just by the airport. People started having these amazing and really quite odd responses to the Spirit. They were responses to the Spirit, and it affected all sorts of places. A couple of guys who are in the church, Greg Reeve and Andy Weeds, just as they came to join Dayspring, or I think before they joined Dayspring, were really excited about this after the thing had established a year or two, and they decided that they were going to go to Canada, and it sort of impacted them. I know that it impacted me as well, and there were many of us who were touched out of this, and we thought that this actually could be the rising of the sun, the awakening that we were looking for. Because any awakening needed not to happen to stay inside the sacred circle, inside your warehouse building or your conference centre or your meetings, but it needed to affect people outside as well. And sadly, of course, In all the excitement, it didn't really have much impact. In fact, probably the major impact that it had in the longer term for lots of people was that it led to people being skeptical, and it led to them getting disappointed and, in fact, trying to distance themselves from that whole idea. And during the first 10 years that Dayspring existed, we moved really strongly towards saying that if there's going to be a revival worth happening, it needs to be something that's happening outside sacred walls. Doesn't really matter much if people are getting dead excited inside church. What really matters is that it's going to happen outside as well. Now, our experience, and the experience of some others as well, is that it's very difficult to get people to buy into that. People in authority, people with influence. And you'll see this. It isn't by any means totally true, but just put this one in the back of your mind and have a look at it. And do you think how many times when you see a promotion of any kind coming from the sort of Christianity like ours, do you see a picture with people with their hands in the air? Quite often it's a silhouette. That's almost the definitive expression of what good Christianity is. It's people inside sacred bounds having a good sing, getting very excited. Now, I'm all for that, but it becomes a bit of a problem if it defines us. And that's really what we think is going to happen. So it is difficult. There's no real story around about this sort of thing happening outside of church. As well, there's a problem if it's a long process. I wonder if Mary talked to God, because she was somebody who thought about things, if she said, well, I thought the baby was going to be noticed. I thought my little baby was going to be noticed. And on day one, noticed by the shepherds, and they say about the angels. On day 8 or whenever it was, they take him to the temple and Anna and Simeon confirm it, which is pretty low profile as well. And after that, nothing. Nada. Zero. Happens for ages and ages and ages. And here they are with this baby, perhaps 3 months old, perhaps 6 months old, and there's a kerfuffle outside the house, and this whole retinue arrives. I don't know whether they had camels, but they had to travel with something. So, you know, you've got sort of Humvees outside the house, you've got blue flashing light, so you've got the whole stuff there. And these guys come in with ridiculous presents. No new baby grows. Not even second size baby grows. Not even piles of nappies or anything that could be useful when you go back to ordinary life. But there's sort of royal regalia. There's myrrh, strange stuff, expensive sap. Actually, I've just given my myrrh away to my son, who's doing a service in Pinehurst this morning and wanted to do something, but I've all our frankincense has gone. I don't know where it's gone, but we've got no frankincense. And we never had much gold in the first place. But those things were there, and they must have come in pretty impressive containers. It was a real situation where you didn't throw the wrapping paper away, I bet. The wrapping paper would have lasted for years. But anyway, there it was. It was a long journey. Then the other thing that, of course, is difficult, because you get ambiguous evidence when you've got a long journey. Things are not clear. Carol talked about the fact of where she'd seen God at work with some of our friends, some of her friends in particular. But you know that when we say to people, come up and tell us stories about where you've seen God at work, for everybody, those sort of stories of things, well, I think I've seen God at work, but I'm not quite sure. If I get up and say it, will other people believe it, or will they just think that I'm making this up? Yeah? Ambiguity in the stories. And of course, there's this fascination we've got with wanting to see the extraordinary. And sometimes the extraordinary does happen. So the long and short of it is really that if you're looking for good things to happen outside of sacred circles, then there's a lot of pressure. There's real difficulty. And of course, it particularly affects where we're looking to see God at work in small things in our own lives. And it also affects what happens with Open Blue, because it takes a long time and the evidence is ambiguous. The evidence with Cabaret Connection is ambiguous. The question is, really, how long is that sort of process? In the end, I think a lot of the time we've opted for the ordinary. And sometimes people say to me about Dayspring, and I say, well, we may be boring, but we're still here. Because there are a couple of churches at least who have come along. People have left Dayspring to join those churches because it was far more exciting. And they've been and gone and died and decayed, and there's nothing happening. And we know that people like the extraordinary. David was telling me just before Christmas that he knew of a situation where a church, big church, had lost almost all of the people between 18 and 30 in the church, who had moved 150 metres down the road to another church that had established itself. Why? Because it was more exciting. There was more of this going on. There was more hands in the air. There was more big stories. There was more promotion. And of course, we're all a bit affected by that story. And when we see an exciting story, we get into it. But somehow, for some of us, let me talk about me. Somehow within me, there's this desire to see something exceptional, to see the sunrise, to see the county where we live, to see the people we know, to see our neighbours affected by God. Whether it's seeing a star and making the connections, or whether it's seeing an angel and being blown out of their situation. So where does that leave us? Don't know how good your memories are, but back in 2016, we started off the year with a set of sessions about being wakeful. And we put forward the idea that actually, rather than using the word revival, it actually helped us a lot because of the focus would being broader, to concentrate on using the word awakening. If you have a look, I think, at mid-July 2016, you'll find that there's a sort of review of the teaching of that put together. But we had three themes that we looked at which have been important as metaphors for an awakening happen. The first is the idea of the weather changing. I'm all for the weather changing. And of course, with climate change, we've seen a bit of some of this. But just imagine what would happen if the spiritual weather changed so that, to extend the metaphor into farming, if the seed of the gospel went into somebody's heart, rather than it exist in a cold and infertile environment for forever and a day, it very quickly grew. So when we talk about the weather changing, that's what we're thinking about. The second thing we talked about was wells opening up. Now, we can't find time to go into that, but the whole idea of wells is there in the Old Testament about the fact that there was nourishment, there was fruitfulness, of course, which ties up with the weather and climatic change and results in growth. And the third thing that we looked at and is important to us is this whole thing about waking up. So wells, weather, waking were three images that we revisited. We talked about habits of wakeful people. And I want to tell you, for me, that it's a thing that won't go away. It's with me quite strongly, because as I was reviewing this just before Christmas, I was thinking about the fact that among many things I got stick for during my viva for my thesis was the fact that I was told, you can't just talk about revival like that. Okay. And I think that the motivation for that was that the person who I was talking to came from a church like ours, but was part of a younger generation, and really was quite embarrassed by the fact that people were expecting something wonderful to happen. And so I went away and just pulled out the research that I'd done and which is based. And it was fascinating to see this. Back in 2018, once again, David pointed this out to me. Ness Wilson, who now leads our network, was talking, and she's the next generation down. She's even younger than David, I think. Which isn't very young, but it's quite young. As she was talking about the possibility that God would bring about revival again. And she's actually quoted Terry Virgo, who leads another network, and is actually older than me, so he's very old indeed. And looking at what Terry Virgo was saying at the time, he was quoting a guy called Colin Whitaker from the Assemblies of God, who was making a connection as well about awakening. And we're not the only people who think that things could be better. Somewhere deep within the psyche, within the DNA of Christians like us, is a conviction that this is not all there is. And the wild stories we hear and the amazing things that we hear could happen again. What else am I going to say? I think I've probably said almost enough to make the point. But just before Christmas, it was the evening that I'd spoken last and said that today we were going to start a series on communion, breaking of bread, that was going to run throughout the early part of the year. The leadership team here, Rolf and Rosie, David, Carol, myself, Andy, Marion was away, but the rest of us went and sat and listened to Ness, and she got up and said, look, my big theme is that again, pioneer should be contending for awakening. And gosh, she woke me up. I thought, lady, you're singing my tune. You're saying the thing that we think is important, saying that things don't have to be like they are, and they could change very slowly or very suddenly. You see, we're good at recognising big changes, right? Carol commented on the fact that somebody who she doesn't know directly but is a friend of a friend had asked her a question about spiritual experience. Now, that's quite notable. I don't know how they phrased it, but it was something about encounter. Now, we noticed that. But what if there were 10 stages along the way before that guy got there that we hadn't noticed? And what if there are 25 more stages before he says, I think I've encountered Jesus? Some of us would shut up shop and have gone home by then. We'd have said nothing's going to happen. And I was stirred, and this is a story that some of you may find difficult, and that's part of the reason I'm telling you this. Just before Christmas, these things always seem to focus up then. One of the worship leaders in a big church in California that's very well known, Bethel Church in Reading, their child suddenly died, 2 years old, I think, and the church decided to pray that God would resurrect the child. Now, that seems scary and odd, But in a way, to me, that seems admirable as well, that people might pray that way. Because it has happened before. It did happen in the Bible. And who knows what God would do? And I watched and listened, and I thought this could be really embarrassing in the networks. The child never rose from the dead. They buried the child in the end, which was terribly sad. But the stuff that the church wrote there, and you can look it up, I thought was wonderfully well balanced. Not all of what they've written in the past has been well balanced, at least by my standards. But they wrote about the fact that we're not trying to force God's arm. We recognise that it may not happen, but why shouldn't we pray? And I thought, that's great. That's really reasonable. And there am I on the Saturday before Christmas opening the Eye. I think it was the Eye. Yes, it was the Eye. And Janet Street Porter, you've heard of Janet Street Porter. Okay. Not for me to describe my likes and dislikes about people. But Janet Street Porter is headlined as saying, "I believe in God and I pray." Now, you get these kind of articles about Christmas. But she goes through her article, puts up her case, and in the last three paragraphs, she said, "There is a church in Redding, California, where a child died earlier this week, and they prayed that the child would rise from the dead." She said, "Whatever you might think, I find myself sympathetic to people who believe that much." And I think, wow, what if that does add to all the other little changes that we see and could actually be evidence of an awakening? And of course, there are articles in the New York Times or articles in other papers at that time as people reflect on the fact, could it be true? People have been doing that for years. But could it be true? Very quickly. Ness talks about contending for awakening. I think that's always difficult, because if God is king, the thought that we have to kick him into moving spiritually, I think, is pretty stupid, apart from being slightly disrespectful as well. But there is no doubt about it that when we pray, things change. Why? I don't quite know, because God doesn't need us to pray to make things change. It's the way he's chosen to work. So we live with that and we appreciate it and we respond to it. You know that we need to develop habits that are good for the long term. So if, Karen, you're praying for your mum and dad, somehow we find ourselves in a place where we don't get disheartened. Because, you know, hope deferred makes the heart sick. And we've all got experiences like that where there are people we're praying for and they get fed up with. Last year and the year before, we did a thing called Thy Kingdom Come, which was okay. The first year we saw good stuff happening. The second year, I don't think we got any more traction because some people just can't get along to the meetings. It lasted 10 days. It was a good time. This year, it's a real problem because it's plonk over the spring bank holiday, just the way in which the thing falls. And we've been wondering about whether that was the right thing for us. And we can still do Thy Kingdom Come if we want to. But it just all ties up with what we've got here. And what we're going to do is we're going to take the Lent period, you know, the period between Ash Wednesday and Easter, to have a time of focused praying that will not rely on meetings. We may have some meetings, but we want to stir everybody up to be praying for an awakening. An awakening for our neighbours, friends and family, an awakening for the church, an awakening in the county, and an awakening in the world, to actually pray about those things. And the way we're going to frame it is we're going to think of it in terms of 40 days in the desert with Jesus. And I hope for those of you who use Lent as an excuse to do some slimming and stopping chocolate, that we'll look a bit higher. That's okay if that works for you. But it may be that there are some positive practices that you need to put in place. Now, this may make no sense for you at all, but the two positive practices that I've come across are these for me. One is I will not avoid watching TV programs that I know will upset me. Okay? So if there's a program about suffering that I would say, oh, I can't cope with that, I'll actually positively engage with that as part of the desert practice and say, Lord, I am going to watch it, I'm going to take it on, I'm going to get myself in a position where my heart is touched like your heart is, and I'm going to pray for that. Okay? That's an example of a positive practice. It's pretty different from not eating chocolate, isn't it? The other one that struck me, which is just a bit easier, I am really bad at flipping over the pages in the paper or on the website that talk about overseas news. Okay? That's typical of Britons to talk about overseas anyway. Don't even think of it as being foreign news. We think of it being even further away as being overseas. And I think that one of the things I should do as I'm praying for awakening is actually to engage with what's happening in other parts of the world so God can stir me there as well. So where does that take us? Unfinished, always, as these talks are. We're praying for the weather changing. We're praying for the wells flowing. We're praying for the county wakening. But we're continuing to look for God to do something outside. Now, I hope that you're going to get ready to join with us in praying for those things. I hope you're going to come up with ideas as ways we can do it. Because I think it would be great during 2020 if we stir ourselves up and say, yeah, we do not believe that what we've got is all there is. We do believe that things could change in the county, in our families, in the nation, in other parts of the world as well. And something glorious and amazing could happen. So that's the talk. No prayer. Next week, we're going to be driving down to more detail as we start a series on missional living. And we will be, in just sort of 5-minute spots, revisiting this thing about the 40 desert days over Lent, that we're going to focus on praying for a world that could be different to the world we live in now. Okay?